Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information, and I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 2, and Dave, Steelers underway. I know you and Alex have been reviewing what's been going on at practice on a daily basis with his reports, which is always great insights. But, you know, they get up there. The reporting kind of went as expected, and the circus that is reporting with Antonio Brown in a limo, James Harrison in a fire truck, you know, that made for some early stories. But the real activity started yesterday as they put on their first pads. And, of course, what comes with that, what comes with early training camp is injuries, and the Steelers got a couple guys dinged up as well.
Yeah, they sure did. You know, things were looking good. Of course, the PUP list when they reported to camp only had two players on it. That list has now dwindled to one, being as Kanan Severn was removed from it the other day. He's back practicing. But yeah, you know, you get the pads on, and you're bound to get a few people banged up, and that happened during Sunday's first padded practice. Afterwards, Mike Tomlin said that rookie running back James Conner had to leave practice late with a shoulder injury of some description. He said he's being evaluated, and you know they don't have a lot of information regarding that. Now, I think,
but it's something that now you say, okay, is that a recurrence of what happened earlier with him in during practice earlier in the year?
Well, didn't he have? You mean with Conner?
Yeah.
Well, with Conner, he was like a hamstring, I think, during the OTA sessions with him.
Yeah, I thought he dinged his shoulder up as well. Maybe I'm misremembering, but you know, one of the and look, again, we've talked about what an outstanding citizen James Conner is. One of the things, you know, we talk about Le'Veon Bell and how much time he's missed. I mean, circumstances a little bit different with James Conner, but he obviously missed a lot of time at Pitt. And it's a little concerning to see, you know, him get dinged up in the OTAs and then dinged up here right out of the start of training camp.
Yeah, their report, I believe, from Dunlap this morning on Twitter is that James Conner was sent back to Pittsburgh for, you know, to get that shoulder further evaluated. There was a picture a fan posted on Twitter last night posing with Conner after practice, and he of course he had that shoulder in the sling. Not earth-shattering news, probably to be expected there. So hopefully it's just, you know, maybe a minor dislocation or something like that, and 3-5 days off, and then he'll be back at it again. I think it's safe to probably assume that James Conner will not practice on Monday. The Steelers, of course, are off Tuesday. We might not see him for a few more days. And he reportedly, and even according to Tomlin, had a good practice on Sunday, especially when it came to the backs on backers drill, which I don't think really probably surprised a lot of people when it comes to Conner there. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed with him. And in the meantime, you know, this is a, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit, Fitz Toussaint. You know, this is something that plays right into his favor here with this early, with Le'Veon Bell, of course, missing camp, and then now James Conner sideline. Mike Tomlin went on to say a few other players suffered, you know, what he described as heat-related injuries on Sunday, and they were rookie seventh-round draft pick outside linebacker Keon Adams and tight end Xavier Grimble. Adams, of course, was drafted by the Steelers in the seventh round this year, while Grimble is now in his second season with the team. Alex and I were talking last night, David. It seems like Grimble's training camp last year kind of got off to a heat-related start. And a guy that looks to be in such great condition, I don't know, maybe he needs to drink him some pickle juice or hydrate a little bit better ahead of training camp practices.
Yeah, so let's talk about a couple of those guys and you know, the transition from Conner here in the running back spot. We mentioned this a little bit on Friday, Dave, and to me, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what the Steelers do with their wide receiver and running back groups. Because, look, when you think about the way the Steelers have constructed their roster over the past couple of years, typically they've gone with three running backs and five wide receivers. And you have a situation here where you have four running backs who are clearly in the mix to make the roster, including Fitz Toussaint and James Conner, along with Niall Davis and obviously Le'Veon Bell. And then in the wide receiver group, look, we've talked about this a lot, and even without putting Cam Severin in the conversation, they've got nine guys. And realistically, you know, they're not keeping four and seven. You know, so we've been talking about a group, a combined number of eight or possibly nine at different times. And, you know, Fitz Toussaint, look, he got some credit for what he did on the backs and backers yesterday, kind of early in the competition, you know, standing up Ryan Shazier. Dave, when you think about Fitz Toussaint and his odds of making this team, you know, all of these conversations are assuming everybody's healthy. If somebody gets dinged along the way, that's obviously going to change things. But if Fitz Toussaint is healthy, are his odds making this team, you know, greater or less than 30%?
Wow. You know, putting a number on that is obviously tough right now. But I will say this. Niall Davis better be one hell of a kickoff returner. Because his tape, David, Niall Davis, that is, as a running back, it's just not overly impressive. And especially the last few years, and I think Matthew Marks, he did a post on him a few weeks ago. You know, we talk about successful run percentages and how, you know, if a first and 10 run only gains 4 yards or less, then that's not a successful run. You know, it goes 45% on first down, 60% on second down, of course 100% on third and fourth down needed yardage to make it a successful run. If you look at Niall Davis' career carries, his successful run percentages are really, really crappy. Now, Fitzgerald Toussaint, his percentages, while better than Davis' numbers so far, you have to remember that you were talking about a very, very, very small amount of carries there. So it's hard to draw any big conclusions with that. But, I mean, on tape, which is a key factor, to me, Toussaint looks like the better back. Now, Toussaint obviously is not the explosive kick returner option that Niall Davis is, but really is Niall Davis that explosive option right now either? We're going to find out here in the next several weeks. I think Toussaint is the better pass protector. Mike Tomlin even made sure to give kudos to Toussaint during yesterday's backs on backers drill, that he really set the tone, and I did not find that surprising at all, especially if you go back and look some of the breakdowns we did on Steelers Depot last year with Toussaint. If there's one thing he can hang his hat on, it's pass protection. So, you know, barring injuries and everything, you know, what percentage did you set with Toussaint? 30%?
Yeah.
Man, that's probably right on the number. And it's really, I mean, I think logic would tell you that it would probably be a lower percentage than with everybody healthy. But, you know, maybe I just like his chances a little bit better. I think this all comes down to Niall Davis and what he can give you as a kick returner. He dang sure better be explosive and get that football out past the 40 a few times. And besides, if you have a great kick returner, the other team's just going to boot the ball out of the end zone anyway most of the time, unless you get into winter. I don't see Davis as being the asset that perhaps several others do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I felt like, you know, coming into camp, I felt like Niall Davis was more or less a lock to make the team. We've talked a lot about Connor and when he was drafted, and I didn't expect that. I expected them to use, you know, one of those picks in the, maybe not quite as aggressively high as they did to go James Conner, and I'm not sure they couldn't have gotten James Conner a little bit later in the draft. But look, he is what he is now. So you have to assume, barring injury, Conner's going to make the team. I assumed Niall Davis, when he was signed, was going to make the team. Well, obviously, that's three guys right there. And if I have to choose today between carrying a sixth wide receiver and a fourth running back, obviously this is going to come down to special teams roles at some degree as well. And Toussaint has some capability there, but I'm going to be leaning to the wide receiver, and I'm going to be leaning toward a guy like DeMarcus Ayers over Fitz Toussaint. Now, DeMarcus Ayers is a guy who's going to have practice squad eligibility. I'd have to look at the numbers for Fitz. He still may, though, right? He still may be practice squad eligible with the new rule change they put in 2 years ago.
I think he dressed more than 8 or 9 games last year. I'll have to research that with the rule changes. I'm not.
He's right. Yeah, he might not be. Okay, so yeah. but Ayers is, and obviously that's another factor in the whole conversation. So that's one aspect of that. Now, the reason I put these together is because, you know, special teams and thinking about some different things. And the other guy who clearly, you know, made an impression on some people in the first couple of days here was Justin Hunter, who made a bunch of good catches. Again, you know, different a little when you're running in shells or you're running it with it without pads on, it's a little bit different than running in pads. But he's a guy, at least in terms of some of the reports out of St. Vincent, you know, looked good early.
Yeah, I mean, the way you're going with this, what are you advocating? Maybe a fourth running back and only 5 wide receivers?
Well, at the end of the day, I'm going to guess it's going to be 6 and 3. And because I think they have, you know, they have some questions at the wide receiver position with guys like Sammy Coates. Look, we know 4 guys who are definitely making the group of whatever number it is. You know, it's going to be A.B., Martavis, Juju, and Eli Rogers. Those 4 guys are making the team, you know, unquestionably. And then you can look at the rest of them, DHB and Kobe, and, you know, we know the names, Ayers. And, you know, if Ayers wins that punt return job, you know, we can speculate again, you know, as we do every year, you know, when's the year that Antonio Brown's not going to be the primary guy? Well, is DeMarcus Ayers going to get that opportunity this year? I feel like DeMarcus Ayers has a better shot to make this team than a lot of people do. And probably I feel like he has a better shot to make this team than Fitz Toussaint. But both those guys are, you know, right on that kind of borderline edge list.
Well, here's the thing with you know, I've all along said 3 running backs, and I can't see that being any different. You know, obviously, whatever you want to classify Roosevelt Nix in, you know, fullback. I mean, he's obviously not a ball carry, but he is a hell of a special teams player and a fullback, great fullback on top of it. You know, I think it's 3 running backs that you're going to keep outside of that. Keeping another one on top of it, you're not going to dress 4 during a game anyway. So your third, you know, your second and third better be able to be special teams capable. And, yeah, Toussaint, you know, he can get back there and catch kicks. He's not going to give you a lot as far as a return guy. And you can probably throw him out there on a coverage team, and he might get you 2, maybe 3 tackles throughout a regular season. Now, Nile Davis is not going to give you anything as a coverage guy, but he might give you something. You know, he might pop 1 or 2 for 60 or 70 yards, you know, as far as returns go. So I think it's an either or with Nile Davis and Fitz Toussaint, and it ends right at that. This, of course, assumes James Conner is healthy, because Conner, you know, Kevin Colbert has said it since day one, you know, look forward to him playing on special teams and potentially a 4-phase guy at that. Now, as wide receivers go, I definitely can't see it being 5. Only 5 wide receivers are going to keep, and then it becomes, is it 6 or 7? I think early in the offseason, Alex was advocating maybe keeping 7, as many as 7, but man, that's a lot of wide receivers, and one of those, if you're keeping 7, you would think would absolutely positively be DHB because of his special team prowess, and then you can make an argument.
And then Ayers possibly winning the punt return job.
Right, then Ayers winning the punt return job. But then, you know, wow, that's a lot of them. And boy, Ayers sure better win that punt return job if that's going to happen, for sure. Because, you know, those last 2 guys, DHB and Ayers, let's face it, we hope we don't see those 2 guys playing much wide receiver this year.
Right. And I don't care how good Justin Hunter looked over the weekend. He is on the outside looking in for me, behind Sammy Coates and probably behind one of those other 2 guys. We've talked about what his special teams capabilities are, and maybe it's just he didn't get the opportunity in some of the other places he's been to be more of a special teams guy. But again, if he's going to make this team, it's hard for me to see him making it, because they go, well, you know, we need to have him on the field for 25 snaps a game, you know, lining up on the outside. I just can't see that.
Let me tell you, though, I've been a big DHB fan, not so much before he arrived to Pittsburgh. But you know, once he was signed, and you go back and you look what he had to go through in order to keep that foot in the league, like he did, you know, with the Colts there, switching to special teams, and then you know, when you look at the tape, you say, okay, well, I understand why the Steelers signed him. Still has some speed, can contribute on special teams. Sure, the hands are questionable, but really, you know. And he's been that player since his time in Pittsburgh. Now, Justin Hunter, I think Justin Hunter, offers you more as a wide receiver right now. Now, obviously, nothing in the special teams portfolio right now. But there's been a narrative running around with Justin Hunter. Well, he's never had the quarterback and this, that, and the other. Okay, that might be true. And I was telling Alex the other day, it sure would be nice to go back and see how many incompletion targets that Hunter has had thrown his way over the years that were actually very uncatchable balls or you know, were things that you could totally place on the quarterback or not. I don't know. That, you know, bygones be, you know, that's all in the rearview mirror now. The fact of the matter is I think Hunter is a very capable wide receiver, and I think he offers you more, especially in the red zone, than a guy like DHB does. And then I think that's how you need to carve it down like him. Are you willing to trade up the special team prowess of DHB in return for a guy that might can give you 4 or 5 red zone touchdowns a year?
Well, if he's on the field for 4 or 5 opportunities to get red zone touchdowns, that'll be interesting, because you figure he's not in your top four, and Le'Veon Bell's going to be on the field, and depending on how you look at the tight end position, Jesse James has done some things in the red zone, so. I'll be shocked if Justin, well, again, who knows if he's going to make the team, but I'll be shocked if Justin Hunter has over more than 2 touchdowns with the Steelers this year. So
6'4", and 12 career touchdowns for him so far, and 6 of them have come within the red zone.
And on not a lot of catches. His percentage of touchdown catches is high. That's definitely, you know, something I'm sure they looked at when they signed him.
Right. One trick pony-ish plus the red zone.
Okay, so let's a couple guys, Odom and Grimble get dinged up in the tight end position. Didn't sound like Scott Orndorff, did all that well in the backs on backers drill. What's your level of concern for the Steelers at the tight end position, where they stand coming into the season, coming into training camp?
Yes.
Yeah.
Look, Jesse James. He's not, we're never going to talk about Jesse James as being an elite tight end. With that said, you know, he made some improvement last year, especially as a blocker. I want to see more out of him on third down. He'll do some very combative type stuff, and then he'll turn around and drop an easy one on a third and one, you know, that kind of thing. So I am concerned about him. He's not a guy that's going to split the seam and average, you know, 12, 13 yards per reception, in my opinion. He's serviceable, okay? But, you know, he's definitely not going to give you what Ladarius Green gave you during those limited snaps that he played last season. All right, you move past him. Who's number two? Well, David Johnson. But David Johnson is David Johnson. He's not going to give you a lot out of the backfield as a receiver. You know, you might throw 4 passes to him all year on a wheel route or on a him settling soft portion of the zone like he did last year. Not many catches that way. He is a good blocker. Boy, his body composition looks a lot different than it did the first time he was in Pittsburgh. I'll tell you that. He can block on the move for you. All right, so there's your top presumably your top two guys. Xavier Grimble, do we really know what Xavier Grimble is right now? Very inconsistent player last year, but when he was on top of his game, he showed you some nice things down the middle of the field. And the Steelers need that kind of guy that they can put in there in 2 tight end sets that keeps defenses honest, that lets you bust right up the seam there. And
I'm with you on Grimble, and I think, you know, we were hoping to see more out of him last year. As you talked about, look, he did down the middle of the field, catch some balls, tied touchdowns and down near the goal line. So he did some things, but again, lack of consistency, what are his capabilities blocking. The Ladarius Green thing caught us all by surprise when it was announced. Not that we didn't recognize it as being a possibility, but you would have thought they wanted to get him to training camp and reevaluate things. So he's not around, and Heath's retirement, look, maybe it was a bit of a surprise. Maybe it wasn't a bit of a surprise. It's been 2 years now. But then losing Green, who you thought had been signed to kind of fill that hole, it is, I think we can say with some level of certainty, it is the weakest position on the roster, right?
Oh, that and maybe the depth at inside linebacker. I mean, definitely on offense, I think it's your weakest top to bottom position there. I understand a lot of people being excited about the kid out of Pitt and of course, Fazan Odom. But, I mean, in a perfect world, you should be rooting against both those guys making the team, because that means Grimble has taken that next step that we want him to take and can play 200 to 300 snaps and be a lot more consistent player and be a good 1-2 punch with Jesse James there. So, I don't know. Is it fair to say that the viability of, I'm trying to use bigger words to impress you now with now that you're back, the viability of the tight end position in 2017 mostly revolves around Xavier Grimble.
I think if it turns out to be a plus position, it will be because Grimble did a lot of stuff offensively.
And I mean, look, keep your fingers crossed, because he was just inconsistent. We saw Xavier Grimble block well at times last year. We saw Grimble block not so well at times. We saw, in that game against Miami, a drop or two that we don't like to see on kind of a mesh route concept there. When Landry Jones came in the game, he's just got to put it all together. I mean, this is obviously his last shot. How surprising would it be? Now, look, you already got Orndorff banged up now. You had Grimble leave with heat related stuff. Them tight end lines got short mighty quick. Could we see another body in camp as soon as today being Monday? And what kind of possibility would you put on maybe a late final roster cut down add? The Steelers have done this a few times over the last few years, of one being a tight end being brought in last minute with experience.
Most likely position for sure. Yes. So I would go with that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Ben. He did some interviews, and maybe we want to relate it to this CTE study that came out last week. Both the Times and the Boston Globe reported on this. It's a study done in Boston, and I think there was an additional study maybe also at Johns Hopkins. And the gist of it is, Dave, is that basically every guy who played professional football showed signs of CTE. Now, there are lots of questions that I have not read the report. There are lots of questions that I have in general. And one is, are the guys whose brains were used in this study, were these guys who were all symptomatic, showing symptoms of CTE, and therefore their brains were donated on their passing to the study to see that? Because that's at some degree, that would be self-selective in identifying it, and if all those guys showed outward signs during their lifetime, then you would expect, them to show signs when their brain was analyzed. So I don't know, exactly what to take from this, but we keep getting information from various sources along the way of the dangers of head trauma and kind of continued activity and what it can lead to later in life. And obviously the immediate impact of this is the Ravens have a guy, Penn State grad, arguably one of the smartest guys in the NFL, a guy who's a math genius, and I don't use that word lightly, John Urschel, who 2 days after the study and citing the study decided at age 26, competing for a starting job on the offensive line for the Ravens, that he was going to retire. So Dave, did you take anything new away from the fact that, you know, another study comes out kind of confirming, I think, what we all know now, that football puts you at risk for brain injury, you know, during your career or certainly after your career? And do you expect to see kind of maybe other players follow John Urschel's lead?
Well, we might have even had one this morning. Breaking news out of Jacksonville Jaguars that after 9 seasons in the NFL, offensive lineman Brandon Albert announces his retirement. So, you know, here we are. These guys get that, get through their rookie contract, get a second deal, and get around that year 7, year 8 mark where they're probably pretty comfortable. I don't know if we know yet if Brandon Albert's, you know, citing this recent CTE study or whatnot, but it does seem like we're having more and more players, you know, walk away from this game sooner rather than later because of fear of concussions, and not just older ones, younger ones as well. So there's something there. Remember us having this conversation, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months ago, saying what's going to be the state of the NFL in another 20 years, you know. Here's the thing. These players want more guaranteed contracts, you know, a higher percentage of their contracts guaranteed. But how can you guarantee these contracts when players could get that money and turn around and say, sayonara, you know, I'm out of here. I don't want my brain to look like Jell-O. In a few more years,
obviously the guarantee would, if stuff is guaranteed and they retire, then that the future is not guaranteed, right? I mean, they're only guaranteed through what they play if they choose to retire.
You would think. How does it work in baseball?
Same. If a guy voluntarily retires, he does not get paid. You know, he's got an 8-year contract and he plays 6 and retires. He doesn't get paid for the last 2.
Basketball the same?
Yeah. Yeah. If you voluntarily retire, you're not getting paid.
All right. Well,
then the question is, if your signing bonus is prorated, do you have to, is the team allowed to claw back some of the signing bonus? And that is the conversation generally when guys leave the sport. That's the question they have, because they prorate the signing bonus over the length of the contract. So even though the guys banked it all and gotten it all up front, there is a legal argument for the team to get some of that back, and that's generally the issue.
Do you think players have a argument here when it comes to risk versus reward and the guaranteed money?
Well, I think you know, if I'm a player in the NFL and you're looking at the structure of contracts and you see, you know, Pablo Sandoval sign a, you know, 5-year, $100 million deal with the Red Sox, and he's cut 3 years into that deal with doing absolutely nothing well and being injured much of the time, and he's going to get all that money. But if you're an NFL guy, you know, you might look at your union rep and your union leaders and say, we need to restructure things a little bit, because certainly that, you know, you look at that and you look sideways at it. Now, I think baseball's crazy the way they hand out the money and do things. I think there's probably a happy medium in there somewhere. But I'm going to be interested. Look, I don't know that the news from the study that came out was groundbreaking for anybody. I think it was more confirming a lot of things that we've seen along the way. And then this goes to, you know, directly here in Pittsburgh, the Ben Roethlisberger stuff. And I thought Mark Caboli did a good job in his interview on Friday. I didn't see every interview Ben did. But he said, you know, were you surprised that everybody – and it means everybody, the media, us, you know, anybody, you know, fans, kind of completely dismissed your talk of retirement. And he said, well, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I didn't say it to, you know, for a dramatic effect. And he went on to say, and Mark tweeted this today, basically saying, I honestly don't know if I'll retire a year from now or 5 years from now. But there seems to be now a groundswell of people, Dave, who think that maybe this is Ben's last year or two. And I've said all along that I expect him to be the quarterback in 2020. Well, that's getting closer, but that's not, you know, a year or two away. That's more than that. So is Ben's timeline in your mind a little different than maybe it was a year ago?
I still think he'll be the quarterback at least through 2018. All right. And his contract comes to an end when? 2019, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
So what's one more year on top of? I mean, could it who knows? Maybe his skills will be diminished and the team want to move on to the next phase there. I still, all of this, you know, everything he said since the season ended up until through the 4 or 5 interviews that he just gave the other day, I will be surprised if he's not the quarterback this same time next year. And quite honestly, I think I'll be surprised if he doesn't play out his current contract and then walk away. But no longer than that. I mean, I think he'll be up there, well enough in age. He's not one of those guys I think going to play well into his 40s like Brady thinks he's going to do.
Do you remember? And I'd have to kind of think about it a little bit more myself. I'm asking this off the cuff, but do you remember him taking a big shot in the past year or two? Has he more or less avoided the big shots? Now, look, obviously he's been hit, he's been sacked, but you know, because of his size, he doesn't take a lot of shots to the head. But he gets the occasional slap on the head or the elbow to the head or the hand coming down on the head. Do you remember him taking any big shots last year?
Not necessarily last year, but of course that game against the Seahawks the year before.
Yep.
You know,
sure.
that was a brutal shot. I'm trying to think. Most of the shots that he's taken that I've worried the most about him have been the ones below the legs. You know, but no, I don't remember. Now, obviously, been slammed to the ground a few times, and you worry about that helmet hitting the ground a few times. But he usually, you know, once someone gets a pretty good hold of him, he tends to go down pretty easily, right? I mean, yeah, he's hard to bring down unless you get a good hold of him, but it just seems like once someone gets
when you see the second guy lining you up, you're better off getting down than struggling to get free, right?
Right. The Manning Turtle, if you will. But the Manning Turtle comes with the first guy coming after him usually. But no, I don't remember anything that got me worried last year. Now, he does get a lot of those hands to the helmet, seems like, after he delivers a pass, you know, that doesn't get called. No, nothing that worried me. I think the last hit that kind of worried me about him was the one against the Seahawks.
Okay, so, all right.
But all it takes is one, though, right? I mean, all it takes is one.
And look, I was one who was, you know, completely dismissing, you know, Ben's retirement talk. And maybe that wasn't fair. Maybe it was. He's in camp. He's going to play this year. So the answer is he's back. I'm kind of with you. I would be shocked. And now the question is, if you're Kevin Colbert, you know, look, the Steelers drafted a quarterback, but I don't think you or I don't think anybody assumes that Josh Dobbs is the heir apparent or that necessarily Landry Jones is the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger. So you just wonder when you look at, you know, we tend to get ahead of ourselves, but when you look at the roster construction of the Steelers and you're thinking about the 2018 draft, you know, look, running back's an issue because we don't know what's going to happen with Le'Veon Bell. Quarterback now might be an issue. And, you know, we've just talked about tight end being a weak position. Right there, all of a sudden, this is a team that, you know, I think for the Steelers, their depth, their cap, you know, all the things that are going on right now, this organization is as well positioned as it has been to win a Super Bowl since they won a Super Bowl. But, you know, that's partly because of Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell. And if they're not around, obviously things change in a hurry, in a big way.
Are you buying any of this? Some people are trying to push with, if Ben retires next year, just go out and sign Kirk Cousins.
Well, look, if Ben retires at the end of the season, there are a lot of things you're going to get thrown out there. I mean, the answer on speculation on any player or any trade is no. But you know, Kirk Cousins is going to play for somebody next year, and I'll still kind of be surprised if it's not the Skins. But it's not the Skins; it's probably the 49ers, and we can go down the list. I would be very surprised if it were the Steelers.
Yeah, I don't think you jump right back into one of the richest quarterback contracts in the league, especially, right. You know, and look, I like Kirk Cousins. I think he throws a nice deep ball and all, but I mean, really, what has he proven yet? You know,
Kirk Cousins is not a top 10 quarterback in the NFL for me. So I'm not giving him a, you know, 4 year, $120 million, $110 million contract. So that, yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah. So several are trying to write about that and tweet me about that. I don't see that as an option with Kirk Cousins. You know what you do, David? You tag Le'Veon Bell next offseason, and then you work out a sign-and-trade deal with him that includes an early first-round draft pick, and you draft Sam Darnold. It's just that easy.
Yeah, there you go.
It wouldn't hurt my feelings. I wouldn't be irate about it. I mean, obviously, Le'Veon Bell is a great running back, and I hope he plays the next several years in Pittsburgh and all. But I don't know. That Sam Darnold kid, we'll see what happens with him. But he sure was fun to watch last year. And
well, if you're a college football fan in L.A., you got you know, maybe the top two picks in the draft in Rosen and Darnold right there playing across the, you know, across town from each other. So it will be interesting to see both those guys develop.
And look, let's face it, you know, and I have done a lot of study on Joshua Dobbs, you know, since he was drafted. Well, you know, it's going to be fun to see, you know, what he is and isn't over the next couple of years. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of them this year during the preseason. And then, you know, I think there's a good possibility he could be the number two next year. And then, you know, at that point, you know, we should have a lot of enough preseason tape on him to kind of at least speculate a little bit clearer of what he can and can't be. But, you know, I'm not willing to rule out just yet that, you know, he can't be an heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger. Hopefully that's not going to happen for a few more years. And personally, you know, like I said, I will be surprised if Roethlisberger is not the quarterback in 2018, and I'll be surprised if he doesn't play out his contract. But you know, past that, you know, we got plenty of time to kind of look at Dobbs and see maybe if he can be the guy to pick up, you know, to carry the torch moving forward. I just don't think it's going to be Cousins.
Yeah, it's not going to be Cousins. Okay, period. All right, so let's look at the other side of the ball since we've just spent 40 minutes talking about the offense and where things stand. You know, I've been a bit of an advocate for Sanquez Golson the whole way through, knowing the injury history and what's going on and that he shouldn't be written off. But, man, you know, as a gunner running down the field, you pull your hamstring. One of the things about hamstring strains, and I talk about this all the time when we get out of games on Sunday and we have to talk on Monday about the injury report before we hear from Mike. Look, if you pull your hamstring, you tear your hamstring, you're out probably 6 weeks. I mean, Neil Walker did it playing for the Mets this year. I mean, if you actually tear that muscle, you're out for an extended period of time. It's very unusual to have a pull, like a real pull, that you're going to be back in within a week. I mean, it's generally kind of recovery time is a week to 2 weeks before you can be sprinting at the speed you need to impress on a professional football field to do what you need to do. Now, obviously, the grades of this are all across the board, so we're just guessing stuff. Strains, you can just miss a couple days and be back. But for a guy like Sanquez Golson, I mean, you know, any practice time missed is really detrimental for him. I mean, he has obviously in 2 years done virtually nothing. And do I think he has a chance to make the team? Absolutely. Is he a favorite to make the team? No. And, you know, miss, you know, the you know, in the tub, you know the line. So that was to me, Dave, the note on the defensive side of the ball that was most disappointing is that, you know, he's got some kind of, you know, he didn't walk off. He got carted off. So he's got some kind of hamstring strain that's going to keep him out for some period of time.
Yeah, you wonder if he has that cloud that follows on top of his head, you know, like the Adams family or Pigpen.
Flintstones.
Or the Flintstones, yeah. The guy just bad luck. And I'm not one that loosely likes to throw around the term injury prone. You remember when Marquise Pouncey a few years ago, that's all anybody wanted to say. He's injury prone. He's injury prone. I think it was just a little bit different source. You know, Marquise Pouncey was in the wrong place at the wrong time prone. That's what you call that. Now, Cinquez Gulson, David, this kid might be injury prone. Yeah, you hate to hear it because, look, I mean, we don't even know how good or how bad this kid might be because he can't even make it through, you know, a couple of training camp practices, let alone a preseason game or regular season game. You know, Kevin Colbert sent, you know, fired a shot, sent a message earlier in the offseason saying we just can't rely on him. And here he is three practices into training camp this year. And off he goes to the side. And how long will he be sidelined is going to be the question. This is the kind of thing that I think that you just hit on with soft tissue injuries. You don't want to rush him back too early. And even if you don't rush back too early, it can be the kind of thing that you have to have, you'll have to chase for a few weeks here. So definitely not a great sign with him. We heard Carnell Lake say a couple of weeks ago talking about Cinquez Gulson, and if he's going to make this team, it's going to be as a special teamer first, as a backup second. But if you're not out there trying to impress Danny Smith right now, you're not helping your causes for sure. So, you know, his battle, in my opinion, was already kind of tough heading into training camp, and obviously going to be a lot tougher when he's sitting there on the side. And if you're the organization right now, you have to wonder, well, even if he gets back healthy again and shows us a little something between now and the start of the regular season, you know, do we think he is injury prone? How long are we going to have him?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty clear this is a crucial year for him to make an impression. Again, would you know, is this a guy who could get to the practice squad? Would you keep him on the practice squad if he's injured again? You know, you just hope that this isn't something that's, you know, 2 weeks first exhibition game he misses and then he's really behind the eight ball. So we'll see on that front. Two other guys.
Real quick, I'm going to throw this up at some point, probably in my Friday Night Five questions. All, you know, Cinquez Gulson was drafted in the second round, 56th overall by the Steelers in 2015. You know that little game that we always like to play of who you would have drafted. You know, you can only pick from the guys who were selected in the next 30.
On the board.
Right. Right. Yeah. They were on the board, and you can only pick the ones that were selected with, you know, by the time the pick got back around to the Steelers in the third round. There's some nice looking players there for sure, and one of them was an edge rusher, Marcus Golden, the kid out of Missouri, was selected two picks after Golson was by the Arizona Cardinals, and he's turned out to be pretty decent. Quentin Rollins, who a lot of us liked, that cornerback.
Yeah.
Defensive back out of Miami of Ohio, went a couple picks to the Green Bay Packers. Frank Clark, the edge rusher out of Michigan, went right at the tail end of the second round to the Seattle Seahawks. And you can just – Tyler Lockett, punt returner, kick returner slash wide receiver out of Kansas State. State went kind of four or five picks into the third round there. So I think you look, it's easy to and my boy Chris Conley out of Georgia. Remember the kid with a lot of hops at the combine that year? He's now with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was drafted kind of midway through the third round there as well too. Look, it's easy. What about that guy named David Johnson? Plays for Arizona. He was drafted 86th overall by the Cardinals in the third round. You see where I'm going with this, and obviously it's easy to look at these things in the rearview mirror, and I know a lot of people were upset when the Steelers drafted Golson just because of his size alone. Well, those guys right now, you can bet, are the ones looking hard and fast into that rearview mirror for sure, because boy, so far Cinquez Gulson has been a Lima Swede type of bust.
Yeah, and if, you know, the flip side of that is go look at Le'Veon Bell on pick one through pick whatever it was, 40 or 48. You know, teams who didn't take him. So
absolutely, you know, absolutely. Get, yeah, I mean, you're gonna have some misses.
You're going to get some right and some wrong. The thing is, the problem with Senquez Golson is we don't know if he's a miss or not. We know he hadn't been able to get on the field. And at the end of the day, it still qualifies as a miss. But we don't know if he's a good football player. And that's the most disappointing thing, certainly for him, where he stands right now. So, Dave, two other guys who got some attention this week. You talked about depth at inside linebacker. You know, we're going to have plenty of time over the next couple of weeks to go through all of this stuff without having any game action. So I'm sure we'll get into each of these positions. But just your thoughts on Tyler Matakevich and Stevie Johnson. They were a big topic of conversation for us last year about who was going to make the 53. And Stevie Johnson, being a special teams player, looked like a guy who had an inside track as a special teams guy, ends up breaking his ankle relatively early in the season, if I remember correctly, maybe week five or so. And so he's back. Matakevich, he was exactly what we said he was going to be. He was a special teams guy. He did some things well on special teams. He's not a guy you want to see on the field. And then you throw in L.J. Fort, who I think is a little bit of a forgotten guy, who's a better athlete than maybe some people give him credit for, as another guy who maybe there's a little position versatility with him. When you look at these guys early here coming into training camp, any thoughts on any of those guys?
Yeah, Steven Johnson is more of a special teams demon than anything else. Probably a better backup Mac linebacker than he is a Buck linebacker. Alex and I talked about Matakevich a little bit last night, following him starting in place of Vince Williams during yesterday's training camp practice. Downhill guy, probably an obvious selection to be the Buck backup to start the season. More of an above-the-head player who really can has a nose for the football. You think for those of us who were worried about Vince Williams possibly being on the field a lot in passing downs, to me, you really should worry about, if you got into a situation with having to have Matakevich out there starting. I think you absolutely have to find a way maybe to get him off the field in obvious passing down situations there. L.J. Fort, Alex and I talked earlier in the week or late last week. Maybe we don't give this guy enough credit for his athletic ability. You remember back to that opener last year against the Redskins. Did some nice things dropping into coverage, and then obviously he had a pressure rushing Kirk Cousins when he came kind of a delayed blitz off the side and really blew up whatever running back was trying to pick him up in that instance right there. So even said, look, I can see Matakevich being your first guy off the bench, maybe for both guys, but I think there's a reason this team went out and courted Dante Hightower during the offseason. I don't think we should lose track of that. I'm hopeful that Vince Williams can be a more complete player than what I think and have given him credit for thus far. But I am gonna kind of worry about the depth of that position moving forward. And I think if they make it through this year, whatever happens, I think it's a position that you really need to think about dressing early in next year's draft.
Yeah, again, now we got three or four positions early in next year's draft. Yeah, it is an interesting look. So kind of wrapping things up a little bit here, the other thing that came out, I think Artie Burns making a good impression here early the first couple days. Look, Artie, I've said this from the minute he was drafted. I know you and I have talked about it, Dave. Artie's a guy who can play press man on that side. Cockrell's not really a guy that you think of as a press man guy, but Artie gives you that. And, getting to work against Antonio Brown in practice is as good a practice as you're going to get in terms of working on your technique and your skill and what you're able to do. And, I think, look, if you're a Steeler fan, you have to be thrilled with what the Steelers got and what it appears they got out of the first three rounds of last year's draft. And then we'll figure out what the LSU kid, help me out.
Hawkins
is going forward, etc. But, all three of those guys making an impact, and good to see Artie here early in camp, with some positive reviews.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, this is a year you want to see a giant step from Artie. Got off to a slow start during training camp last year with a quad injury. Probably put him way behind, the moving train at that point. Then you fast forward into the middle of the season, kind of a rough start in those early games against Baltimore and Dallas, and kind of settled down, you know, later on in the season. I mean, he still registered, what, 3 interceptions, tied for the team lead with Ryan Shazier, but that's not enough, you know, especially when you got a first-round pick tied up in him. You know, I was real critical of the selection of Artie Burns, not so much as the player as I was where he was drafted. I always felt that Artie Burns was more of a second-round kind of product there. So they gave him a half a red shirt during his freshman year. He is obviously a better bump and run corner than he is anything else, a guy that you just put out there and hope can run with the guy and stay close enough that he's going to give your pass rush time to get home. So we'll see, and we're going to see, real quick here in 2017 what he is. So far so good with him guarding AB. Now, AB, the thing about training camp practices and training camp practices play-by-play, you're going to get beat one play, you're going to get blown up, you're going to make a nice play the next one. It's really kind of hard to gauge these things. During a training camp practice, really with any player. I mean, it's nice to have someone out there like Alex giving us kind of the play-by-play, but we're not going to know anything until we turn the tape on for a couple of preseason games here with any of these players. I mean, heck, here we have Anthony Chiclo being seemingly going to maybe be the camp darling 3 years in a row. But what has he done during the regular season there? So it is good that he, talking about Burns, that he is going against the best wide receiver arguably in the league. And that can't help but help you, in my opinion. So just stay healthy right now. Keep getting those meaningful reps against AB moving forward, and then we'll see what we have during the regular season here.
Okay, yeah, I don't want to kind of recap what you and Alex have gone through, the specifics of what's going on with individual guys in terms of how practice is going. Anything else that you want to hit on here today?
Yeah, just the back end of that injury report we never finished there. Mike Tomlin said that all these guys, possible soft tissue injuries on Sunday. Vince Williams, Mike Mitchell left real early after appearing to maybe step on the foot of Antonio Brown. We already covered Cinquez Golson. I think we talked about Scott Orndorff as well, too. It'd be interesting to see if all these, and obviously Juju Smith-Schuster missed practice on Sunday. Cameron Sutton missed practice on Sunday with a lower body injury. We could have a lot of guys watching practice on Monday. It wouldn't be surprising to see this team make one or two moves with the roster on Monday to get some more bodies in here with some of these short lines. So the big thing right now, just keep your fingers crossed that none of these injuries are long-term, just a couple of days. And boy, the guys that you probably would have circled, David, thinking, oh, I can't wait to see this draft pick or that draft pick during training camp in the preseason, Juju Smith-Schuster, Cameron Sutton, James Conner, three of those guys right now probably going to be watching practice for the next few days, out there at St. Vincent College. So hopefully these guys can get back on the field soon.
All right. I don't know. Have all 32 teams reported now? I would assume we got to be just about at that spot, right?
Yeah, if they're not, there's not many left out there. And I guess we have the first preseason game coming up, the Hall of Fame game coming up this weekend. And, of course, a week from Friday will be the Steelers' first preseason game as well. So football is definitely in the air again. And Alex Cazor will be back at St. Vincent College again today. And he'll join me later on the podcast tonight to recap what happened. He'll, of course, have the daily write-up on SteelersDepot.com. And David Todd will be back on, hopefully with me, on Wednesday to kind of recap what's happened between now and then. You can follow me on Twitter at SteelersDepot. You can follow David Todd at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. If you want a question, you want to fire it to us on Twitter, you can do that as well at Terrible Podcast. And perhaps maybe we can get to some of those on Wednesday as well. David, I appreciate it, and I hope you have a good start to your week here.
Yeah, beautiful day in Western Pennsylvania. Absolutely gorgeous. So, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.